the privilege of speaking in December and was promised a congregation, but that evaporated due to COVID, and I was here talking to a camera. It is great to see you, and it was worth the wait. My name's Craig. I'm married to Holly. We celebrated 20 years of her surviving me a couple of weeks ago. Got four kids, and they're becoming really articulate, and so I was away this weekend and I cooked last night and I thought I'd share with you some of the things that they said in an articulate, respectful tone but clear words. Dad, I'd rather eat three tubes of toothpaste. Dad, I've eaten a little bit but I wouldn't eat more than this even if I was at a friend's house. And then from the 15-year-old boy, Dad, I don't think you can feed your kids this legally, I think. So it's fun having kids that are growing up and becoming articulate and descriptive about the world that they live in and the care that they're provided. So we'll roster someone else on tonight. 1928, some missionaries went to His Imperial Highness Haile Selassie in Addis Ababa, the capital of Ethiopia. And they requested permission to go and take the gospel to a region in Ethiopia, to explore the area. So they were given a permit and they found a guide. The guide promised that he would, that he knew pretty much every road in the entire country and that nowhere was too hard for him to find or him to lead them to. So on that hope, they set off from the capital and they headed out towards a place called Jimma in the southwest, or so they thought. After what eventuated to be a number of wrong turns, the guide finally showed his hand and said, I don't actually know where we are. And overnight, the guide disappeared, evaporated. They were left wondering, what do we do now? We've taken a couple of wrong turns. We were heading to Jimma. We find ourselves in a little place called Wollamo. What should we do? Do we go back again? Do we try to find our way back to Addis Ababa? Do we try to find another guide? Or after taking a couple of wrong turns, do we just do it here anyway? They decide to just do it here. And so they set up for the next 10 years in providing medical mission, education, spiritual formation. They share the gospel of Jesus Christ, the good news that everything has been made right, that the King of Kings is on the throne. And at the end of 10 years of labor, they've managed to translate roughly the gospel of Mark and also see 48 baptized believers. Their description of those believers were a weak but growing faith. That was 1928 that they'd arrived. In 1938, they had to leave. Mussolini and his forces, the great Second World War, was pushing on different geographies and so on, and these expats had to leave the country. They left not knowing what they would find if they ever would have had the chance to come back again. Would they find those 48 believers decimated but still alive? Or would that weak but growing faith have sustained or diminished in that time? I got to choose the reading this morning. Thanks, Megan, for that privilege. And I was tempted. At one point, I was all the way back in chapter 26, and I thought that would exhaust our reader this morning. But if I just maybe give like a helicopter view by using the NIV headings that are in those the chapters that lead into the text that we have today, starting in 26, the plot against Jesus. Judas agrees to betray Jesus, the Last Supper. Jesus' prediction of Peter, one of his best mates, denial. Jesus arrested Jesus. Peter disowning Jesus. Jesus before the Sanhedrin. Judas hangs himself. Jesus before Pilate. The soldiers mock Jesus. His crucifixion, his death, his burial. Guards at the tomb. And then the two women coming to pay their respects at the tomb and finding that even his body is not there. So we come to the well-known part of Matthew 28, those words right at the end. I think it's really important for us to consider the context to which this growing church is planted. It is mayhem. It's disappointment. It's people being disappointed in their own actions in the lead up to Jesus' crucifixion. They're people owning their bewilderment about what they expected and what had happened. And sometimes we have these rosy kind of glasses on as we read the end, but we forget the context that the church is planted in. Many times we feel like we're wasting our time in the wrong spot. I don't know about you. Now we've got language for it. We call it FOMO. Back then we didn't have that. I remember being grade 3 and we were on camp and we were yabbying. And it seemed to me in my grade 3 head that everyone else had caught a yabby except me. And so I kept moving spot. When someone caught a yabby, I'd move spot to there and so on and so forth. All of that culminated in me out of 50 kids in my in the grade 3-4 year level that were down on this camp, me being the only one who managed to fall in. I remember seeing this look in my teacher's eye that I couldn't understand as a child, but now understand full well as an adult of 4 kids, like somewhat bewilderment from the teacher going, how did you manage to fall in? I guess we're going to need to sort that out. Anyway, a desire to be, maybe I'm in the wrong place, but I need to go to the right place. And that can play out in our Christian life as well. I took long service leave about 10 years ago, and we took our family across to Cambodia, to the northwest, a part called Ban Tia Men Che on the map. But Lonely Planet calls it the armpit of Asia. Hot, smelly, and a place where you get really sweaty. No good can come from here. And of course, that's the kind of place that God does a good work, an amazing work in terms of transforming people. And I fell in love with that place on the first time I went there. I took the family across. The youngest was 1, the eldest was 7. And we stayed there 3 months. And my hope was that my family would sense the call of God and that we would actually move there and take that kind of step as well. My wife loved the work that God was doing. She loved being a part of it for a time, but didn't sense a call there. And so I lived for a bunch of years with that wrestle, feeling, I think I took a wrong turn. I think I'm in the wrong spot. If only I was there, or maybe here. My ministry has been based in sort of this area pretty much the whole of my life, aside from different trips and partnerships that I've been involved in. My family's been in this area since 1845. And it's like, God, could we not go somewhere else yet? I'll go anywhere in the world you want me to go, except could we please change the postcode? What about you? Have you ever felt that maybe if you're in a different place, then things would be different, but you're here, the wrong spot? The missionaries ended up being able to go back again. And so they returned to Wollamo after 5 years of absence. And they find that the believers are not only 48 strong anymore, but actually they've grown to 10,000. They took a couple of wrong turns. They yielded their heart. They did what they were doing in that spot instead. And when the pressure came, those believers multiplied. There was supernatural intervention. Turns out the believers faced severe persecution from the Italian troops, but stayed true. Beaten, tortured, killed, they stood fast, heroes of God. They even sang when told to tear their church down and cheerfully obeyed. Other Christians died of cold at night in unheated jail cells. One of their leaders, Toro, was thrown face down in the mud of a jail cell and beaten with a hippo hide whip. "Where is the God who can deliver you out of our hands?" he was asked. "My God is able to deliver me if he chooses, and if not, he has promised to take me to heaven to be with him there," was the reply. Soon afterward, a terrible storm blew off the prison roof and melted its mud bricks. The guards were terrified. They pleaded with Toro to pray for them and then released him. The love demonstrated by believers for each other during this time of affliction made a major impression on unbelievers as well. For example, no provision was made to feed the prisoners in jail by the invading army. This was the responsibility of the family and relatives and friends. Christians in the prisons had no problem, though. They were well cared for by friends and family. In fact, so much food was brought to them by fellow believers and church groups that enough remained to feed the unbelieving prisoners also. This observable love, vibrant though nonverbal, brought many to seek the Lord. Such love was previously unheard of. As a result, the word spread far and wide. In the verses that we had today, from verse 8, the women are hurrying away from the tomb, afraid yet full of joy. They've had an announcement from an angel. Tell the disciples he's risen and he's going to meet them on the mountain. Then Jesus himself appears to them on the way. I think he couldn't resist, right? "Greetings," he said. They came to him, clasped his feet. Jesus says, "Don't be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. They will see me there." There's a work of God in the midst. But while the women were on their way, some of the guards went into the city and reported to the chief priests everything that happened. There was misinformation, there was bribery, there was corruption, there was politicizing, and there was polarization inside this to create a narrative verse 15 says is a story that's still widely circulated among the Jews to the very day when Matthew wrote his gospel. Then the 11 disciples go up on the mountain to meet Jesus. And following this is one of my favorite verses in the whole Bible, verse 17 of Matthew 28. "When they saw him, they worshipped him. But some of them had their doubts." I don't know about you, but I think sometimes we imagine those great words of commissioning that we're coming to with sort of rose-colored glasses. We think, well, if only I was someone like them, if only I was in a place like that, if only I was part of that team, then I could make a difference and an impact on the earth. Maybe then that great commission would work for me. But I'm just Craig from the Doncaster sort of Croydon area. I'm not even sent somewhere else. What difference can I make? Maybe if when I was a teenager or when I was a young adult, I'd made different choices or I'd gone to different places or set myself up in a different way, maybe then God could be using me now. But instead, I'm here and I'm just doing my normal sort of stuff, seeking to live out the kingdom of God and share the gospel through my life and my preaching and ministry. And what about you? Is that something that you've experienced? A friend of mine, his name's David, he became an alcoholic later in life. He actually grew up in a family that had struggled with alcoholism and managed for the first half of his life to really avoid that, then encountered a trauma and found himself deeper and deeper into a hole that he couldn't get out of. He was able to be sort of a functioning alcoholic for a number of years and cover up to his work and friends what was really going on. But there came a point where he really fell into a hole and needed outside help. felt like a failure to himself, to his family, to being a witness to his family, to his friends, and ends up in rehab, sitting there in the courtyard of the rehab center, not too far from here, and sitting there in the courtyard with his Bible open, talking to God and just feeling like a failure for so many reasons. He had a living faith, but an area of his life that was just so out of control. He sure had taken a couple of wrong turns, but had a yielded heart to God and his purposes. Sure enough, a lady sitting at the next table in the courtyard reaches out to him. She says, "What are you reading there?" He says, "I'm reading the Bible." She says, "Are you a Christian?" He says, "Yes." She says, "I've been very interested in exploring Christianity. I've come to really the bottom. Can you tell me about it?" And so he did. And right there at the time of his greatest despair, he had the greatest privilege that a Christian can ever have, where he shared the gospel of Jesus Christ and she received Jesus into her own life and began that walk of restoration and transformation herself also. He thought he was disqualified in the wrong place at the wrong time, was the wrong person. But it turns out that all Jesus needs is couple of wrong turns and a yielded heart. These missionaries labored some more. By 1950, the numbers had increased to 240,000 people. But in the 70s, the foreigners, the expats, are forced to leave again because now Marxism, communism, is threatening the country and is becoming a pervasive force. It's unsafe for them to stay. They have to leave. And this time they think it was different when it was an external threat. Italians, Mussolini's invasion was different. This time it's a philosophy. This time it's pervasive, it's insidious, and it changes our beliefs. What would we find if by God's grace we were ever able to come back? They'd given their working life to these people in Wollamo, the wrong place. 28:17. When they saw Jesus, they worshipped him, but some had their doubts. Then Jesus came to them, verse 18, and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to this God-man." I like what John Piper said about this bit here. He said, just pause for a moment and be filled with a well-grounded amazement at the absolute authority and sovereignty of Jesus Christ over his world and over his unstoppable mission. I do like to compare myself to others at different times, and I'll think, if only I was great at sharing my faith in a way that people would receive it like this person, then I would actually see a greater impact from my life. And don't we all desire to bring an impact and to share freely the gospel of Jesus Christ through our life, actions, and words? And sometimes I feel like I would like to be way better like this person or that person at that kind of thing. You know, I think back to when I was a high school student, actually just up here up the road, and I probably only shared the gospel with a few people. That was like 20 years ago now. And I met one of my high school friends 2 years ago, just before the pandemic, traveled back to Australia, had been overseas, and shared about some things that had happened in his life. And I'd noticed a difference in him, but couldn't pick it. And turns out that many people at different times over the last 20 years had shared the gospel of Jesus Christ with him. And so he'd actually become a Christian, not through any amazing persuasive talk by any one particular person, but actually just being at the Coles up the road in the fresh fruit produce aisle. And he said, all of a sudden the gospel made sense, and so I received Jesus right then and there. I've got a few stories like that, but I'm learning to be more comfortable in my own skin, because more often than not, it seems like fruit from my life in that particular area takes 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. And it's through people watching my life, not just persuasive words, that make an impact in that area. What about you? Do you ever compare yourself? Do you ever think, if I was in the right place, if I was the right person, then God would use me, but I've taken a couple of wrong turns. All I've got's a yielded heart. When we get to 28:19, we see this famous commission that we're all very familiar with. Therefore, go make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Missiologist David Bosch notes this. It is inadmissible to lift these words out of Matthew's gospel as if they had in them a life of their own, and to understand them without any reference to the context in which they first appeared. When this happens, the Great Commission is easily degraded to a mere slogan used as a pretext for what we have in advance, decided, perhaps unconsciously, it should mean. We import our ideas of sales, marketing, corporation growth, business plans, and we forget the verse before that God is that Jesus has all authority, and we forget the verse just before that people with doubts are the ones that are entrusted with this great commission, and we forget the verses before that there is chaos. And there is upheaval, and the world as people knew it had shifted, and politics were up in upheaval, and religious people were not making sense, and all sorts of things were going on before we get introduced to this bit. It comes in a context of Jesus Christ being king, and it comes in a context of us being a part of his team and bringing what we carry. We often disqualify ourselves, not the right time, not the right person, not the right place, not the right people. Yet maybe this disqualification is the very thing that qualifies us. Paul talks about being a jar of clay. And the great thing about being a broken jar of clay is that the treasure leaks out just where we are. In Ethiopia, once the threat was resolved, the missionaries, now aged and in retirement, got one more opportunity to come back and to see what was left of their work. And to their great joy and to the glory of God, they find in 1990 a church of 3.5 million. I went there several years ago and found a church of 30 million. Work of God that came from a seed of a group of people saying, we've taken a couple of wrong turns, we've got a yielded heart, why don't we just try it here, give here a go. And the Lord does the rest. The church all over the earth is growing. It grew from the seed of these people that we see in Matthew 28. People, I don't think, that dissimilar from you and me, people with the very same Jesus as Lord. We're going to show a little bit of a video. It's going to go quiet for those of you who are watching on the stream, just to recall to mind what being a part of that growing church means in the face of centuries. Let's have a look at this, then I'll finish off. Thank you. That video was shown at a YWAM event that I was a part of running, and I got to meet one of my heroes, a guy called Lauren Cunningham, who started YWAM, and I had an opportunity for about 1 minute to walk him from one part of the building to another. And so I thought, how in this short time can I reflect to him the impact that his stories and his faith and some of the things I've learned through listening to him have had on my life? And nothing came to mind. And so what ended up coming out of my mouth was, I've seen you on YouTube. Have you ever had those kind of moments? Anyway, he was very gracious. You may not have heard of this translation. It's called the CLVAV. And it's one that's only got a few parts of the Bible translated to date. Fortunately, there is a translation of the last part of our passage today. The CLVAV is Craig's localized, vaguely accurate version. Then Jesus' decimated team trudged up the mountain where the women had told them that angel had told them to go. Confusion, speculation, and rumor babbled about the city. Social media, mainstream media, water cooler conversations were polarized, but still all revolved on this one event. Everyone had a sense that this was historic, that their world would never be the same again, regardless. At the top, Jesus was there. When they saw him, some of the team were full of relief and elation and wore their emotions on their sleeve and worshipped enthusiastically, but not all of them by any stretch. Others on his team weren't so sure, their heads spinning with recent events and holding their own grief and trauma, a sense of doubt, mixing it with this whole thing just being all too much. Jesus, on the other hand, had all authority and full confidence in his power, his kingdom, his people, and this place. They had all the ingredients for a growing church, and this was his time. Wait no longer. He gave them a glorious permission to take this message with his authority to all people and places, to live out a life of good news, to encourage and equip others to do the same. And perhaps most importantly, he gave them this promise. Everywhere you go, I'm right there with you, even when you don't recognize it. Working with you, even when you don't know it. Will you give me your wrong turns and your yielded heart? Let's go.